Hey, what's up, podsters? I thought of that new word for all of you listening. Isn't that cool? So I don't know if you're keeping up with this, but I recently got a new microphone. Do you like it? Can you tell that it's different? Well, anyways, today I have a special guest, and she is Alana Phillips, who is the Director of Recruiting for the West at Lincoln Financial Network.
Hey, everyone. This is Sarah. Welcome to my show.
Hey, Alana.
Hi, Sarah.
Okay, so what we're going to talk about today is a really kind of out there topic, but I know that that's why y'all are coming to me, because I tend to talk about these things in such a highly irreverent way. As you know, before, I've talked about how to call in these centers of influence, accountants and attorneys and accountants and attorneys and accountants and attorneys. And look, let's be honest. These people are so barfed upon by all of you financial advisors that I think the space is a little bit saturated. Wouldn't you agree? I think you would, right? So I was thinking, how can I introduce ideas about new and different ways to get to wealthy people through centers of influence that are part of their lives? And my buddy Alana, actually, in addition to working at Lincoln as a recruiter, she is a wedding planner, and she's got some great insights about how do you approach and why should you approach some of these non-traditional centers of influence? Tear it up, girlfriend.
Thank you for that, Sarah. I know I'm excited to talk about this. And, you know, I work with advisors all the time that are also asking me, how do I get in front of, you know, more clients? How do I approach a COI? And this is a really, it's a unique way to think about it. Wedding planners or event planners are abnormal sort of centers of influence. But, you know, I found, and part of my process working with a couple in this wedding planning process, is that outside of design and vision and all the other pieces that go into the wedding, we talk about their budget. So I work with them through a template of, you know, average cost for some of these major services and how much they're willing to spend. And it is an insane amount of money. For anybody who is planning a wedding right now, you know this. Where I'm at in California, the average cost of a wedding is $42,000.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah, is that insane?
That's like more than my daycare for like all my kids all year. And I thought that was expensive.
Yeah, and this is for one day. One really big, beautiful, you know, party, an important day, a day you want to be beautiful and memorable, but it is so easy for all of the little costs of, you know, wedding to add up. And I think couples get caught up, and also there's so much hype around, you have to do this, you have to do that, weddings have to be this huge thing, that they end up spending way more than they imagined that they would. So, you know, with that comes some issues, because typically these couples have not discussed finances, believe it or not, because that's the number one issue in relationships that breaks up relationships is finances. And it is an incredible opportunity for an advisor to get in with a couple before they make some huge financial mistakes, right? Maybe they're going to put together this budget with them. They're going to talk about life insurance needs. They're going to plan for them buying a home for the first time or having kids after this wedding is over. And I think advisors are missing a huge, huge planning opportunity here to get in front of a couple before they make mistakes and really helping them to become a good client into the future.
Okay. So we've established that a wedding planner is a great center of influence to have, right? Okay. So I'm a financial advisor. Maybe I'm located in an urban area. Maybe I'm located in a rural area. But how do I go about approaching these wedding planners? Because how do I know what to say? And the other thing, I guess, is how do I know that the wedding planner deals with the kind of client that I would want?
Like, yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, so maybe the question is, instead, we'll get to those two questions, but first I want to know, how much does a wedding planner typically cost a couple to, what's the retainer like, or the engage, the fee?
Sure. Yeah. And that's variable. That definitely, and I'll get into maybe how do you get in with a wedding planner that talks to clients that are more your ideal market, but it can be anywhere from, you know, maybe $1,000 to do some day of coordination to 10 to 15 to do a comprehensive wedding plan and execution. So,
oh my God, you sounded just like comprehensive financial plan, Alana. You're sounding like the financial advisors listening to this show. See, we can all do, I should get like a comprehensive cliche. Like I should be like comprehensive marketing strategy. I should create the comprehensive, yes. Everyone has comprehensive somehow in their suite of services, Alana. Okay. So you're saying 1,000 to like 15 grand. Holy smoky bokey. However, I think that would be well worth it. I mean, I am not married to Antonio, even though I have 4 kids with him. That's one of the things I really love about the relationship is that we are not married because I just, first of all, like I'm just not into, I know all of you, some of you maybe are going to unfollow me on my podcast, but me personally, just for me, I'm not saying this for anybody else necessarily, but for me, I'm not into marriage, but like, you know, I'm very like, you know, stable relationship with Antonio and everything, but I could just imagine if I were having a wedding and I were spending 40 grand, I would be like, I would totally hire a wedding planner because just the nerve wrackingness of that day. Like what if something goes wrong? Like you would have to be kind of the business manager at the same time as getting married that day. Like it would, I don't know, maybe if I had a relative, but my relatives would not be good at this. Like I could imagine a huge family fiasco breaking out and people throwing things over like I could imagine people throwing things like during the service. Okay. That's like kind of how my family, I would, or like standing up on tables and like tipping them over. And I could just imagine how crazy that would be. So I think that cost would be well worth it. But how do you know that this wedding planner is dealing with the ultra wealthy schmelthy instead of, you know, the person that's living a paycheck to paycheck, not high income earner, no money saved, the kind of people in the financial advisors don't like to work with and like to refer to a robo advisor?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think, I mean, you answered some of that in what you just said, is that those that are willing to pay for a wedding planner typically, you know, have more money. They see the value in having somebody take this work off of their plate and letting them just enjoy their day. So they're already, you know, the type of person who is willing to pay a fee for services, right? And wedding planners are experienced creators, right? That's the whole deal, is to create this experience of a beautiful day. And those clients that are willing to pay for the experience are probably the same type of clients that would be willing to pay for the experience of working with you as an advisor. Now,
they're delegators. That's right. They don't have like that brother-in-law or sister-in-law that works at Merrill Lynch and like they want to buy the insurance from them and then like just work with them. They don't want to have a family member.
Exactly. So, you know, in terms of then, how do you make sure that it's somebody that is paying a pretty substantial sort of a fee for this service? You might want to start going to wedding venues or just doing some research at wedding venues in your area. I mean, if you look at, and we've got, you know, Wincy that's here in Livermore in California, and just to have your wedding at Wincy costs 10 grand to get in the door. So if you focus in on some of those locations where it's already expensive to have an event there, you will likely hone in on some of these clients that are in more of your ideal market.
I love this, Alana. This is such good advice. Yes. Okay. So now let's say that we find this hoity-toity wedding planner, right, that deals with the rich and wealthy. So you find Mr. or Mrs. X. How does the advisor then approach Mr. or Mrs. X?
Yes, by not barfing on them. That would be step number one.
You must be a listener of every, like, of the many recent podcast episodes on this show because I keep using that term. Thank you. Okay.
I love it. No, I love it. It's so true. So yeah. So, and this is, I think, why advisors are sometimes afraid to approach some of these, you know, atypical COIs, is that they don't understand their business. So I would say, again, if you go to, you know, one of these wedding venues and you just sat down and talked with their event planner and figured out who are your, you know, top wedding planners that you work with, would you introduce me to them? I want to understand how their business works and what I could do to help them. Right. And approach it from that perspective. You have high net worth clients as an advisor that you work with, and they probably have children who are getting married. Wouldn't it be great if you as an advisor could also add to your clients, hey, I know Jack and Jill are getting married. I've got this incredible wedding planner. You know, he or she is amazing. I want to introduce you to them. Whatever happens, happens, but I think they'll do a great job. Plus, they're going to make sure that this doesn't get blown out of the water in terms of cost for you and what we've done with your planning, Mr. and Mrs. Client, right? So, you know, I think an approach like that is going to completely change the way that you sound to a wedding planner or to a venue that you might partner with that has a wedding planner. And then you're also adding value to your existing clients when the opportunity comes up.
Well, I would think that I would be more likely if I knew a cool wedding planner, I would think that I would be way more likely to refer that wedding planner to somebody else rather than my CPA, because with a wedding planner, it's like, if you've planned my wedding, I kind of knew what it, I feel like I would know you better, right? Whereas if it's like my CPA, if I'm referring my CPA to somebody else, I feel like, well, what if that person doesn't have the doesn't make the income I make? Or what if that person doesn't have the assets I make? Or what if that person has like a tax debt? Like it's, I feel like that's a harder referral to make. Whereas if you just become in with these wedding planners, you know, it might be, because I feel like it's a lighter, more social kind of a thing. Like there's levity to it that there isn't to like, help me not get like apprehended by the IRS, you know, that's like a very serious topic.
Yeah. Getting married is definitely a lighter topic than getting approached by the IRS for an audit.
Right. Or like divorce attorney, right? It's like,
you
know, like how do I, like my friends having marital problems, how do I bring up, oh, let me introduce you to my divorce attorney. Thanks, Sarah. Thanks for like your faith and support in our relationship. So what, let me ask you, Alana, have you been approached by financial advisors as a wedding planner in the capacity that we're discussing?
I had not, other than me introducing this idea to advisors that I work with, and then they're intrigued, but this is typically not something that they have thought of on their own. And I think some of it is just a lack of understanding of how much money is really involved in the wedding business and how much a wedding planner gets into the psychology of a bride and groom and all of their family dynamics, that it all directly ties into the same kind of information an advisor wants to know about their clients.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I would be way more willing to tell. Like, for example, I have very fair skin, and I always have to go to the dermatologist like once a year to get a skin exam. Thank God there's been no issues, but I'm so like nervous and emotional when I go for this exam, because I'm always like, oh, I see this little skin tag here. Like, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. I have four kids. I don't want to die. And so I'm in an emotional mood, and the doctor is like so cool. And I feel like I would like tell this doctor anything, you know, because I'm in that kind of more, you know, like I'm in a different state of mind than I would, like, I would be less forthcoming with, for example, an accountant or an attorney, because I'd be like, this is a business person. Like, is this person going to use this against me? Are they going to try to charge me for more money? Am I going to like say the wrong thing? And my CPA is going to report me to the IRS? Like, I would, you see what I'm saying? Like, or, you know, different like hairdressers. I mean, I don't go to the hairdressers anymore. If you check my YouTube channel out, you know, I cut my own hair last month. A lot of you were like, yeah, it came out okay. Thanks for saying that, y'all. I have ups and downs with this hairstyle now. It depends on the product. But anyways, when I had a hairdresser, it was like, you know, because a lot of times you're there and you're so emotionally caught up in your life that you don't kind of look at it as, you're not there for business reasons, really, you know, whereas like when you're in some kind of a buttoned up banker office, you're such in a different state of mind. But my hairdresser, I would tell her everything, like, oh, I got dumped. I had to, you know, I want to dye my hair a different color. He left me for the girl. Like I had this, well, I'm not going to get into, we could talk on another podcast about this situation I was in once, but like, oh, he left me for like a girl he met in medical school and I had to like go dye my hair and I'm telling the hairdresser and she's like, oh girl, that happened to my daughter. She's married now. This, like, they'll tell you anything.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, one, I tell my hairstylist, she knows my entire life.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, hairstylists, hairdressers would be another great COI. See? Yep.
Also great COIs. Yeah. But no, people tell me as a wedding planner, people tell me things, intimate details about their relationships, about their finances, about their family dynamics.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Family dynamics.
Like, this person, like my mother-in-law, the mother-in-law doesn't like.
Oh,
the brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh good. Yeah. I get all the good dirt because I got to keep track of it. Right. If we're going to have this beautiful day and make sure that, you know, drunk uncle doesn't get up and do a toast on something that they don't want him to talk about, I have to know all the dynamics, but they share everything with you. And part of it is exactly what you're saying. We're not in a stuffy office. We're sitting at a beautiful winery that they're going to have their wedding at, and we're drinking wine and we're going through their budget and we're building their timeline, and they just share anything and everything.
What could be better than that? This is so valuable. Okay, cool. So listen, I'm going to wrap up the podcast here. So let me ask you first, before I do that, does the wedding planner go to the wedding?
Yeah, typically. So they're going to either be helping coordinate day of, or they've got somebody else that's helping to coordinate with them.
Okay. Yeah, because that also must be stressful for the wedding planner.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. You have to be a pretty nimble, you know, high tolerance of stress level type of person to keep up with anything that can go wrong at a wedding.
Right. Exactly. Like, I can't even, I mean, I'm thinking about my own family. Like, There was one time when someone in my family, this was so funny now that I think, well, now that I hearken back, but like, this was 20 years ago when someone in my family got married and one of my relatives got drunk and was like going off about how a few people in the family were, she used the word bloodsuckers. And she's talking at the table. And I remember that it was like talking about one relative to another relative that was like the ex-husband of someone at the wedding. And it was like, he's kind of just, cause he's a more distant person from the family. And so he's trying to just, he didn't have an emotional reaction to that. But if he hadn't been, like, I just think of the look on his face and he's kind of like, yeah, yeah. I mean, this person had been drinking, but it's like so funny to think about the crazy stuff that goes on at weddings. So I can't even imagine how high stress this is. Super.
Oh yeah. I'm not
stress.
Just joking about drunk uncle. You got to keep track of drunk uncle or, you know, crazy mother-in-law or
right.
Whatever.
The whole deal, I mean, yeah. Wow. This could be like some kind of a reality show. I feel like.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
they have those Bridezilla wedding shows, but there should be like day of the wedding. There should be like life of a wedding planner reality show. I feel like.
I agree. Yeah.
Okay.
We've got some good
This
stories.
Is such a cool podcast, girlfriend. Thank you for being on with me.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, Sarah. It was such a pleasure and appreciate the time.
Cool. Okay. So listen, if anyone wants to get in touch with Alana, then I'm going to leave her contact information down below in the show notes. And thanks, everybody. I hope that you liked my new microphone. Tweet out this podcast if you appreciate the blue snowball ice microphone that I bought to help to get the audio quality up of this podcast. Woohoo! Thanks, everybody, for listening. Bye. Talk to you later.